Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
So I met Nigel 30 years ago, and I met him through a mutual friend, and I was always talking to this friend about various philosophical things and about the nature of God and all kinds of things. And I always used to have this problem trying to understand how there could be a God plus suffering in the world at the same time. And it just didn't make sense that if there was a loving God, there would be so much suffering. It just seemed crazy to me with all these stories from the major religions that say God created us and put us here. And then I was thinking, well, he's going to create us, put us in suffering, and then watch the fun rather than leave us in a state of perfection. And I could never understand this. It was a big problem for me. So my friend said to me, okay, you should meet my friend, Nigel, because he's got some really interesting ideas about all of this. And so I met Nigel, went to see him a few weeks later, and he explained his notion, his concept of what God might be and the reason why we might be here. And he suggested that God was a state of absolute perfection and perfect freedom, and that in that state of perfection, there's also the perfect freedom to no longer be perfectly free and to be restricted, and that our existence in this physical state, subject to all kinds of problems and suffering, is part of a choice that we made ourselves to explore difference and separation. And that kind of made sense to me. So that was my first reason for getting to know Nigel. And once I got to know him, we spoke about all kinds of things. And he used to have this idea that long ago about what these grey aliens or alien visitors might be. In fact, I think he was probably the first person to say that they might well be synthetic and created by an advanced technology somewhere out there in the universe, very similar to us, but a little bit further along. And just like we send probes to Mars to go to places where we can't physically go, that they could well have been sent out by an advanced civilization to explore the universe and see what kind of information they can find and what kind of situation they can find for a continued existence for beings who maybe on their planet like ours, they destroyed it and they're looking for somewhere that they can go on.
Yeah, exactly. And did he ever look at anybody else's research and ever change his thoughts on what they really are and why they're interacting with human beings? I'm thinking about people like maybe Jacques Vallée and Dr. Hynek, because they came up with very different thoughts about what they really are. It was really shocking, actually. But they think it's more spiritual. And I know you're talking about the soul, but what these things are just, they're demonic in essence. I mean, did he ever look at anything like that?
He certainly did. And so basically he's not saying that they're purely physical and purely substantial physical atomic creation that doesn't have another dimension at all. So I know Jacques Vallée and others have spoken about I think it's called an ultra reality, like another dimensional reality, and that these entities come from another sort of phase of existence that's not physical, right? And so there's the extraterrestrial view and there's the ultra-terrestrial view, okay? Nigel says both. He doesn't say they are only this. This is only one manifestation, that they're physically created just like we create these things. He also says that they come from another state of reality too, which is more enforced than our current state of reality. He described three levels of tension. Okay, so you've got a state of no force and perfect freedom, where there's no separation of points and no tension and no force, because everything's in a state of perfect union. So you only get force when you have separation and you start to pull apart two points, right? Where there's perfect union and everything's reconciled, there's no force. So what he said was that there's that state of complete freedom and no force. Then there's a state of complete force, which is the opposite of that. Okay. And in existence, because all things will exist, and all things are possible from that state of perfect freedom, there's its opposite. Okay. Complete restriction and complete separation, a state of total chaos, what they're imagining the universe will go into right at the very end of its existence, when the entropic drift has gone to its furthest point and total chaos. We're in between that state. Okay. So it's three levels. There's the state between us and the state of perfection, okay, which is less force than us. And Nigel believed that we actually, when we die, we go into the, what he described as the space between atoms, and we're in a less enforced state. Then there's our physical state, which is in the middle. And then beyond that, there's a state of greater force, which he called heavy space. And he believes that the manifestation of the grays is like a program, which exists just like we can create a program which can, on a 3D printer, print out something solid. The ultimate technology, which would have been created on these planets out there that have developed more than us, would be not to send out physical entities, literally send out physical entities that are already formed, but to send out a program that can construct itself in a physical format in certain conditions. Right. Those highly enforced conditions are at a greater stage of force than us. And when there's bursts of force on our planet, say atomic blasts, nuclear tests, earthquakes, volcanoes, there's a kind of break in the curtain between, there's a match between the force of the heavier state and our in-between state, and these things can get in. The program can kind of translate itself through the 3D printer of that connection, and it can make these beings happen. So Nigel's idea was not that they are literally like in a factory, sort of made out of some kind of substance. It was more like that. And we, and his other very, very important concept is that we, in our current state of what he called devolution, because he always said that we come from a better state of perfection and we're on the way down, are heading towards a state in which we are entrapped in the physical state and can't get back anymore to that state of perfection. So when we die, we get caught, okay, and we can't go back. And we are, just as we are with our technology, we're investing ourselves in a very synthetic virtual identity, identifying more and more with the physical rather than the spiritual. We are heading towards that program that exists out there, that heavy space program, and we're pulling them into us. They are there as our next stage. Okay, so some people say that it's a state of evolution, that we will somehow become, convert ourselves into some kind of bionic, semi-machine type of entity, augmented, okay, so that we can have all kinds of wonderful superhuman capabilities. That, Nigel would have said, and I totally agree with him, is our doom that we're heading towards a state where we meet the greys halfway and we become similar to them.
Before we go too far, I want to give John an opportunity to tell me how he actually met Nigel.
I met him in a similar way to Danielle, but a different friend. Because when I was young, I was very, very interested in the paranormal and UFOs, etc. And, you know, I read quite a lot about all of the different theories at the time, and I was fascinated by it. And a friend said to me, well, I've got another friend who goes on about the same thing. So one evening, he took me over there, and Nigel and I just sat, and virtually for a week, we almost didn't stop talking about all of these things. We became very great friends. And then I went off, because my orientation was scientific, and I loved the ideas that Nigel was coming out with. But then I went off to university and got my degrees, etc., and became a cell biologist and biochemist. And, you know, during all of this time, Nigel then started writing his first book. And of course, there was a scientific orientation to it. And I was absolutely fascinated by what these greys, you know, there have been a number of interceptions throughout history. And I was fascinated by, you know, what on earth could they have done to affect us? And I became very interested in working with Nigel a little and finding references for him on potential targets that they may have used in the past to make us more like them, as Danielle was saying.
I think he was on to something. Let me, before I go back to address what you just, what all you laid out for us, Danielle, I wanted to ask you, was there anyone, I mean, researchers, it seemed like it's fragmented to me, the UFO community, because I do hundreds of interviews, they're all saying something different, and you really, I'm not really getting any kind of uniform thoughts about what's really happening or what the phenomena is, really. I mean, did he have anybody else that aligned with his research and his thoughts about what the phenomenon was?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. And it's something that I sort of came across too, because I was his researcher, right? And I looked at all the different avenues and all the different researchers and what they were coming up with. I didn't really find anyone who came up with a reason for why they're here. There were people who described them and described the phenomenon, explained it, documented it. And Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, they were Nigel's heroes. He thought they were incredible. And of course, Professor John Mack. In what they did in terms of documenting the phenomenon and presenting it in the cold light of day as something quite horrendous. So that was quite a new thing compared to the early contactee idea of them possibly being something benevolent. But I didn't really find anything that really explained the reason why something as technologically advanced as that, with technology way in advance of ours, right, and obviously hugely intelligent, would be interested in us. Because really, in those terms, we would be nothing, we'd be like monkeys are. So to them, as monkeys are to us, we would be monkeys to them, because in terms of our primitive nature compared to their kind of intelligence, right? In purely technological terms, right? That's all I'm talking about here, not in terms of real value. So right. Nobody seems to ask the question. So what do they want from us? You know, what is it that interests them so much? It just makes no sense that something so advanced would be so fascinated to follow us. Abduction runs in generations, right? They're following people through their biological generations, through lifetimes. So something is going on here. And if they wanted, like, for example, Zechariah Sitchin had this idea they wanted gold. I find that a little ludicrous, that there was something to do with gold and gold mining. I mean, basically, with that kind of technology, they can do anything. They're not going to be after something physical, right? And if anything, we would be kind of an annoying thing for them, because we have emotions, we can do things which interrupt the efficient circuit of whatever they want to do, you know. And it just seems to make no sense why they would be here. And I found a complete drought in the whole field of ufology and all the people who have looked into this in terms of an explanation for what they actually want from us. Why are they here? Nobody that I could ever find answered that question. Nigel seems to be the only one who has actually explained, well, maybe there is a reason. Maybe there is something that we have that they just cannot have, don't have, cannot have, and will never have.
Yeah, you're right. You never hear about why they're here, or even hear theories about why they're here. I never hear that. Yeah, it is very bizarre. But I do hear things like you said, you know, they're here trying, you know, they're interested in our natural resources and things like that. I wanted to ask you, okay, let me go back, because I want to dissect some of the things that you said earlier. And John, feel free to jump in here as well. When you said things like you mentioned, like the nuclear, you know, nuclear explosions and things, and how it's affecting different dimensions, if you will, And that really started to, the phenomenon really started to amp up when we started to do, the government started participating, doing programs like Operation Fishbowl and detonating high altitude nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. Did Nigel agree that that was the point of, that was maybe a turning point to getting into our reality? Like they were really starting to become very, very interested in what we were doing here.
For sure, for sure. So it does seem to be the case that the huge amount of the start of the whole thing with a huge amount of sightings did happen in the 40s with the first nuclear tests and nuclear explosions. However, it's also the case that throughout history, way back to this, Aboriginal paintings on cave on walls, which are 30,000 years old, that literally are depictions of the Greys. Okay. There's so many records in different cultures of something that resembles the Greys. In fact, the Old Testament, Nigel suggested, is a documentation, seems to be a documentation, not of a God that's something that's a loving God that's from a state of perfection that is better than our situation. It's a vengeful God. It's a jealous God. It's a God that kills people. A God that has pillars of light, that does physical things like parting water. It's and has priests that wear robes with gold wires in. Is that so? And this is something that von Daniken said, Eric von Daniken, and I think Nigel very much agreed with him. This sounds like an alien God. This does not sound like God at all. And that's not to say that everything in the Old Testament comes from that God. There may well have been people at that time who were inspired by the true state of perfection beyond this universe. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure there's parts of the Old Testament that include that. But the whole story of Exodus and Moses and the Ten Commandments and the Ark of the Covenant, honestly, it's just full of it. It's just full of references which really do sound like some kind of alien interception point. So through history, in many different cultures, the ancient Hindus in the Vedic texts talk about something called Vimanas, which is another word for space, for kind of spaceships. They were flying through the sky. Okay, so this was thousands of years ago, before any kind of technology like that existed, and were powered by mercury, right? So there has been reports there is some kind of mercury component to these spaceships. So it's throughout history it's happened. But in terms of our recent history, yes, the nuclear tests and the nuclear explosions seem to have precipitated their entry. And their entry is not so much, according to Nigel, something they would, okay, let's enter now. It's automatic. There's a kind of veil of a skin of tension, right? Where our stage of physical tension interfaces with their stage of more tension, right? And if that's broken by a resonance of greater tension in our frame of reality, then they come in. And it's really interesting that Bob Lazar, of course, was an Area 51, and I believe he's completely authentic, and so did Nigel, spoke about this very heavy element that they hadn't yet discovered. I can't remember what the number is, maybe 115 or something, right? Hadn't yet been discovered. It was later discovered. So the heaviest element not yet discovered, of course they would know about that because that's their reality. That's going into their frame of tension, okay? So it really is the case that Nigel provided a model which covered Jacques Vallée's idea of everything, okay, where it's more of an insubstantial extra-dimensional state rather than an actual physical phenomenon, and combine that with saying it's also actually a physical phenomenon. So it's both. It really is both, according to Nigel. And that kind of rings true with me, too.
Yeah. I want to ask John a question here. Do you think things like the testing, the nuclear testing, was done on purpose, maybe to bring them over into our reality? I mean, I go back to stories about, I did an interview about John Dee, the mathematician who was supposedly having conversations with aliens and things like that. Not aliens, but angels. people say they're one and the same, but maybe they knew that doing this would disrupt, you know, the veil and bring these beings over into our existence. I mean, do you think it was done on purpose?
In a way, I do, because in Nigel's thesis, the Greys, if you like, have been nurturing mankind for many thousands of years. And when we started to, you know, respond to the signals in the coding that they were providing us, and really start to develop all of this technology, then these were signs really to them that we are reaching a level where this merging may be more possible. And therefore, I think that because we weakened the interface further, then they were able to come in more. And it's more of a sort of incidental thing, although it was deliberate in the beginning, if you see what I mean.
Let me ask you this. What about projects like the Montauk Project? I mean, there were some really crazy, scary, chilling things happening to people. Like, you know, I had an interview with a gentleman years ago who talked about they were really trying to, you know, trying to fuse his essence, his being, you know, have this alien, you know, come into his body and take over his body through different methods. One of those was using, you know, sex magic, things like that. I mean, do you believe things like that were happening in order for them to get what they really want from us?
I can't say specifically whether that's believable or not. I don't know for sure. All I can speak about is Nigel's theories of what generally does happen.
How are they trying to accomplish their goal?
Yeah, exactly. So Nigel's explanation of what's going on here, in order to explain that, I have to first of all explain that very interesting question that doesn't seem to have been answered by any other person in the field. What do they want from us? Okay, what can they possibly want from a species that is basically so primitive in their terms? Okay, so what Nigel has said, and that's why his first book was called Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, okay, we have a connection to something that's beyond the purely physical state. We are not purely physical. Our inside essence comes from a non-physical state, that state of perfection that I referred to earlier. Okay. And this can be called a soul. The word soul has been very much misused throughout the centuries by all kinds of religions, and it has a strange definition in people's minds, and perhaps that's not so accurate because there are so many takes that people have in it, and a lot of the religions have tried to control people also through this idea of what they call a soul. So let me define what a soul is before I answer your question properly. Okay, so Nigel defined a soul as a line of connection, right, back to that state of perfection. So in that state of perfection, as I was explaining earlier, there's perfect freedom and perfect and complete awareness of all things. So it would have to be that, or it wouldn't be perfect. Okay. And that is the master reality of all realities. In that state of perfect freedom, there has to be the possibility to no longer be perfectly free. Otherwise, there isn't perfect freedom. Okay. There also has to be the possibility, the inclusion of all knowledge, including knowledge of imperfection. Otherwise, there isn't all knowledge. Okay. So our existence in this physical universe is part of the expression to explore imperfection, which must exist within that scope, and to have the opportunity for the freedom in order to do that. Okay. So imagine that state of perfection expressed itself into imperfection. Okay. Now, the thing about a physical universe and imperfection is that it's chaotic, right? You can't predict what's going to happen. It's a chaotic situation. So, subject to what scientists call the second law of thermodynamics, or entropy, which means there's greater and greater states of chaos with time. And in Nigel's book, and anybody who would like to read the book would have to look at that in detail. I can't go into that here. He described how that state of imperfection was created in terms of how the dimensions came to be, from a state of no dimensions to a state of what he called the moroid, three-four-four-dimensional state of twist. Okay, so that entropic momentum into greater and greater states of chaos with time is what all physical things are subject to. So Nigel's supposition is that the whole light, if you like, from the state of perfection of the Godverse came into that state of imperfection. Most of it went straight back, okay, because it wouldn't stay. There's no point in staying. It would have realized it. But because of chaos, some got caught. So it's very similar to if you stand on a beach and you have a look on the sand right by the sea, you see a foamy residue every time the tide comes in and goes out again. And that foamy residue is there because the sand is uneven, irregular. Okay. That foamy residue is the 5% that got caught. Okay. And I say 5% because, very interestingly, scientists cannot account for 95% of the matter in the universe.
It's true.
Dark matter and dark energy, they call it, right? Nigel's revolutionary suggestion is that is the 95% that went back and didn't get caught. The 5% of atomic reality that's still here is what got caught. And that's the foamy residue on the beach. But what's caught still has that inner connection to that state of perfection. And that's what these greys are fascinated in, that soul line of connection, because everything that's purely physical and synthetic and doesn't have that line of connection to beyond, before time even happened, will break down with the entropic drift of the universe. So entropy, just to explain it to maybe to listeners who haven't heard the term before, just basically means everything rots, everything breaks down. You leave your car outside, it will go rusty. You leave food out of your fridge, it will go moldy. We ourselves get old and break down and die. It's unstoppable, right? In terms of physical things, right? We have something, because we come from a state beyond the physical, that can maintain order and doesn't break down. So these technological creations, the greys, noticed that that's something. They can't notice it in terms of its reality. All they can notice is the impact it has on the physical. They can't detect the non-physical because they're purely physical. So what they notice is that each of us individual people have a fingerprint when we're alive, a force fingerprint, if you like. And when we die, that fingerprint leaves the physical reality, okay, and seems to come back again. Nigel believed in reincarnation. Okay, so that whole soul line of connection is a process of reincarnation until we manage to escape or until we get totally trapped in a physical universe. Either possibility can happen. Okay, they saw we go on. We seem to survive death. They're fascinated by this because they cannot survive death because they're purely physical. It's totally impossible for them to do that. So they are trying to piggyback onto our ability to survive death. And the best way for them to do that is to introduce their programs and their information into us so that we carry it with us when we die. And if we carry it with us when we die, we can take that information anywhere in the universe. Because in the non-physical state beyond after death, physical death, travel is not a problem because there's no restriction. There's no physical restriction. So that is their fascination with us. That's what they're after. And genetic interception, as documented in abduction episodes, and their fascination with our gametes, our sperm, our ova, the experiments they do, and the way they track people through generations is all about that. That's why they're fascinated with us. But the key point is not so much all of that. In terms of the mechanics of how the whole thing works, it's our headlong momentum into becoming exactly like them based on the programs they have put into us. And we are heading into absolute disaster by trying to embrace a virtual existence through social media, through living online, through never having physical contact. Transhumanism is the next stage after that. The metaverse, all of that stuff is our heading into their direction and losing our true reality. And we're at a turning point. And that's what Nigel was screaming in the months before he died. We have to get this through to people. This is a turning point. People have to treasure their humanity and realize how different it is and how precious it is and how valuable it is and how it is the true progress is in terms of that master reality, not in terms of technology.
Living things, as opposed to programmed effects such as the Greys, are able to change the direction of entropy. In other words, they're able to, because they understand what perfect order is and still have a line back to it, that human beings, for instance, or all living things, actually can express a choice to do to actually go in one direction or another. The more entrapped a living thing becomes, the less it's actually able to do that. But any living thing is in a better state of being able to affect the physical forces in the universe than these creatures are. They only respond to programs. Those programs can be very highly sophisticated and can manipulate matter, but they can never do what it is that they're intending to do. And mankind is intending to do this at the moment, and that is to make life from the raw materials. Based on this type of theory that Nigel's putting forward, that's completely impossible.
And also, would you say, this sparked something for me. When you say we have a connection back to that perfection, or we're linked to that perfection when we die, is that also, is that why they're doing so many experiments and tampering with our DNA?
Exactly. That's why they're tracking us. So this is why abduction runs in families. But I do want to make a really important point here in case any of your listeners are abductees. Nigel's take on abductees wasn't that they are the ones who are being affected, right? What's going on here? They are the ones they can't get. Okay. So they intercept biological lights. Okay. And some people, their souls are too strong, and they can't be reached. They can't be intercepted. They can't be affected, right? They are the ones they take up. So I would hate for abductees to think that they are the ones who are being affected in this way. Quite the opposite. They're the ones they can't get. They're people who are born into lines of genetic interception, and they resist the program. So what actually happens is the actual genetic changes happen at the time that the body is forming in the womb. They don't happen in at the abduction point. Okay, that's completely different. Okay, they can't happen at that stage. So what Nigel explained is that the people they can get are the people who become what are commonly termed ghosts. Right? That doesn't mean all ghosts, all spirits that people, the psychics can see, are these trapped, gettable beings, not at all. But there are some ghosts who are, and I'll define ghosts as, for the purpose of this explanation, as those who are restricted and trapped in relating in an obsessional fashion to what is physical, so that they can no longer see that there is any reason or any motivation to look beyond the physical.
Wait a minute. When you say ghosts, are you saying people that have died?
But good question. Really good question. No, I'm not talking about all people who have died. So maybe I should explain something first there. Nigel said when people die, when we're alive, right, the blood is pumped by the heart around the body and creates like a magnetic field because there's iron in the blood, right? That's what holds the soul, or what he called the morphogenic electrospatial field in his terms, to the body, right? When the heart stops, the soul is released, right? It's no longer trapped in a physical state. And it goes to a state of lesser force, that stage of that what he called the light reality, okay, the opposite to the heavy reality where the grays are, okay? So, but there's gradations of that. So that state of existence, he explained, exists in what he called the space between atoms, okay? At the edges of atoms, there's the most force. Okay, and as you go more towards the center of that space, there's less force because, if you like, the edges of atoms creates a kind of like the current, a kind of, the force creates like currents in the space between atoms of force, eddies and currents of force. So the closer you go towards the center, the less force you are. You go towards whatever level you are resonant with. Okay, so if you're somebody who has identified with values that are resonant with a state that's non-physical, okay, i.e. somebody who has put people for other people first, has cared for people, has been generous, has always made decisions which assert the value of spiritual and priorities that go beyond a selfish, materialistic outlook, you're more likely to go towards the center of the space between atoms and escape the force at the edges of atoms. If you have chosen in your life to identify with materialistic values, if you have if you haven't taken care of other people and you have pushed people away, if you've hurt other people, if your whole momentum is that, okay, you've identified with the physical universe, what you can see with your physical sense, what you can experience with your physical senses, right? That's your major reality. It's like you're tuned into the physical. So when you die, you hug the physical. You stay at the edges of atoms and you're caught at the edges of atoms. You don't go beyond it simply because you've chosen that. No other reason. There's no St. Peter at the pearly gates saying, okay, you can go this way and you can go that way, hell this way, heaven that way. It's wherever you resonate, okay? So some people have seen what I'm calling ghosts are what some psychics have seen as individuals who seem to be doing the same thing again and again and again, trapped in one state. So you might, I remember a psychic telling me he saw a ghost just putting a book on a shelf and taking it off again, time and time again, or somebody who's in a room constantly hanging up a cloak, you know, doing the same thing again and again and again, because they're trapped in a mindset, restricted. So Nigel's whole message was that what is commonly called sin in religious terms is nothing more than restriction. Yeah. It's restriction of the freedom of expression of mind. It's being trapped in a physical state so that you can't see beyond your own physical senses. You can't realize that other people, for example, have a sense of perception and reality just as powerful as yours. And if you have that empathy, you'll want to look after them because they will feel like their needs will feel like your needs. Okay. But it's that restriction. And Martin Luther was the great thinker who said the same thing in the past. And there was a revolution in the church when he said, change your mind. Sin is restriction. Okay, so restriction is the problem. And in our current world, where we're going in a headlong rush, especially since the pandemic, into more and more technological augmentation of our reality, and losing our capability as a functioning spiritual being, as functional spiritual beings, we are embracing that state. And we are becoming catchable. If we're at the edges of atoms, we're catchable by the grays because they can only communicate with the physical. They can't get into the non-physical. And if we're catchable by them, they can insert their programs into us because we're stuck at the edges of atoms in fields of force, and we can carry what they are into our futures, which is what is the aim.
And we translate that into a psychology, which actually then propagates that in future lives.
I have to go back to what you said about, you know, the craft themselves, because I just listened. This is a very, very old interview where a gentleman was, I think he was, he worked in a funeral home, and he was called by the, I'm talking about Roswell now. He was called to get these little, coffins, 3-foot coffins. They needed those. And he saw some things, and he talked to a nurse that was there that night, and they recovered something that was bodies of grays, he said. You said they're not totally physical, but they've recovered things. And you, I mean, what did Nigel say about that? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, are they organic robots that can manifest in the physical totally if they wanted to, or what?
I'm really glad you asked that question because, yeah, it's something that needs to be clarified because it's a very confusing thing because Nigel is saying they're both. Yes, they are totally physical, and yes, they may well have been physical specimens of these creatures, okay? But what the actual underbase phenomenon is a program, okay? So there is a program there which is the ultimate end result of that decision to explore the state of separation and imperfection from the state of perfection. So in that state of perfection, there's total understanding of all meaning, okay? Everything that has meaning. And as we become more and more restricted, we lose that sense of meaning. Okay, so in a very similar way to nowadays, kids will play computer games with each other online, right? Rather than play together and use their imaginations. They will just have preset things that they do based on computer games. They won't have that contact with each other that human contact. Neither will they use their imaginations to expand their sense of reality. Okay, and that's seen as progress in terms of technology. But actually what's happening is we are giving up on and not using our innate capabilities to be grand, to be creative, to be imaginative, and we will lose those capabilities, okay? So it's the opposite of progress, okay? So that's just a short diversion from what I was trying to explain. But in that momentum, okay, to go towards a situation in which we deny that initial state of meaning and value, we transform that sense of meaning into just information. It only becomes information, just like the information on a computer game, the information that's stored on a hard drive. It's not meaningful anymore. And in people's lives, meaning is going. There are so many people who feel empty and have lost that sense of inner meaning. The more we embrace this technological, in inverted commas, progress, the more we seem to be losing our meaning as individuals. And all we're left with is information, more and more information on the internet, wherever. And we have ChatGPT that explores all that information and can give us extrapolations on that information. And so meaning is mortgaged to information. Final translation of the complete meaning and glory of that state of perfection is a state of pure information, no meaning. Because artificial intelligence, which is what the greys are, can have no meaning. Because artificial intelligence cannot be conscious. It cannot be aware. We have awareness. It cannot be aware. It's just a program. It's information on a hard drive. Nothing grander than that, okay? So that program is actually intrinsic to reality. It's not just something that's created by beings on planets out there in space who have surpassed our technology. It is the ultimate translation of meaning into total information. Okay, that program is there in heavy space, in a stage of entropy and chaos beyond our stage.
Is there an intelligence behind it, though, that created it?
Very good question. Okay, so in terms of the artificial intelligence that is actually created, like the artificial intelligence we are creating now, okay? Yes, there is. There are natural living beings who have a soul line of connection to God that created it, just like we are creating artificial intelligence. But there's another dimension. to all of this, okay? And that is a completely, more like what Chevalier said and the other thinkers who believe there's an ultra reality to these, this alien phenomenon. It's a translation of that perfect mean, total meaning of what Nigel called the Godverse, state of perfection, into just information, a program. And that program can be translated into grays and craft in our middle reality, between the heavy space where that program is and the light space, which is the pathway back to that state of perfection and where we go when we die, if we're able to enter into it because we haven't got stuck in the physical universe. Okay, that program, when there's bursts of force, as I said, can literally, like a 3D printer, be printed out into our reality, and those grays can just appear. And we are getting to the stage where, because we have gone so far in entropy, we have become so stuck, and we're embracing this whole headlong rush into transforming our meaningfulness into no meaning, okay, with this technological drive, that we are embracing what this program is. We are choosing the program rather than choosing meaning. And when you choose the program rather than meaning, the grays can connect to you, especially if your biological line is part of a long line of genetic interception going back in the past. Then your biological aerial will be better at receiving information than meaning. Okay, so it's both things.
How do you know that your line is? Is there any way for anyone to know that for themselves?
You ask great questions. Okay, so I would say no. There's no way to know it. But in a way, I would say it's totally irrelevant. Okay, so no matter how intercepted your biological line is, and you can see from these abductees, they are the ones Nigel believes resist the interception. Okay, and they are different, so different to it, they can't be affected by it. No matter how intercepted you are, you have the glory of the spirit inside of you, which can beat anything. And that's the message of hope that Nigel gave, right? So long as you choose values and priorities that are not centered on a purely physical existence and have and embrace the notion that we're all connected, we're all one, okay, that we're all one person and we should care for each other and we should preserve that meaning and that sense of human grandeur beyond anything physical. If you embrace those priorities, you will not be affected by them. Simple as that. And there's no need to know whether you're intercepted or not. You just, all you need to do is do that. And no matter how intercepted you are, you will beat them.
You really make it sound, I'm sorry, because, go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Well, that's because your mind is then beyond the resonance from which they can reach, which is only the edge of atoms. If you move further towards the center of that space between atoms, you can't be touched by them. But it requires those qualities Danielle's just outlined in order for you to be able to achieve such a thing.
And am I right? I mean, I'm thinking about this as the way you're talking about it, it's like our reality is like a computer program made up of, you know, ones and zeros, and they're hacking into it.
Yes, very much like that. It is a kind of hacking, but they can only hack if we choose to center ourselves in a physical scope. Okay, so it's like, so Nigel described the human body as an aerial, okay, for reception. And through our motivation, our psychologies, the way we behave, we tune that aerial to either tune into the universe beyond atoms, to tune into the universe of atoms. Okay, so with every decision, with everything we do, so we can simply make the choice to tune ourselves into a reality that does not include the grays. And that's even possible for the most, for intercepted lines, as I've explained, happens with abductees. They are the ones who are resisting it. And all these experiments that they're doing are exploring what it is that's breaking up their program. So it would be wrong to envisage the Greys as actual beings. Okay, they're not beings. They don't have consciousness. They don't have awareness. No artificial intelligence can ever be aware. Our uniqueness is that we can be aware of our existence. And the only reason why we can be aware of our existence is because we have something that's not physical in us, a reference beyond time. We have a reference of timelessness, stillness, through which we can experience passage of time. And that's what awareness is. We can experience past, present, and future. They can't do that. They are only in time.
And that awareness gives us the ability to choose between one pathway and another, and we can express, you know, unlike what many scientists currently think, Nigel and us think, you know, that living things have an absolute free will. They can choose to go in one direction or the other, and therefore, if you actually then go into like the metaverse, etc., you are essentially giving your will to the program, and the program will then take you over, basically, and work with you as a component of that master program.
Okay, and let me ask you this. Okay, so their goal is to separate us from our soul. And then it brings me back to a conversation or maybe a lecture I heard from a shaman where when they are having, they're under this other state of consciousness when they partake in the ayahuasca, that they're shown people that are, you know, they're among us, but they don't have a soul.
Yes.
I mean, the reason why I'm asking is what they're doing. I mean, have they been successful through the years of actually doing it or separating human beings from their soul?
That's again a great question. So, David Jacobs, in his research towards the end of his published research, anyway, he was talking about hybrids that have been created by the Greys and are living amongst us now. Okay. So Nigel agreed with this. He said, yes, there are hybrids that have been created and that are some mixing with us right now, and that in the future that will increase more and more and more. David Jacobs said this was something that absolutely terrified him. He didn't want to believe it. He thought it was ridiculous at first, and then more and more of his abductees told him this, that they're everywhere. They are infiltrating our society right now. So yes, they have succeeded in achieving some kind of merge between their program and trapped human souls who are unable to escape the edges of atoms. Okay, yes, they have done that. So, yeah, in answer to your question, that Nigel did believe that that is going on, and that these hybrids are actually in some of the very powerful positions in society and are affecting from in the background stuff that goes on in the world.
Made with the help of government officials, John, you think? I mean, what are your ideas on that? I mean, do the Greys have help?
Well, I think. Yeah, these semi-hybridized people that are created, I mean, they will be fostered to take up key positions where they can actually make decisions to influence society to promote the propagation of that program. So, yeah, I think that you're going to find them in all walks of life, but in you know, as Nigel said, he said these people will be at the elbows of decision. So you might find that there are editors in newspapers, etc., that will shift the direction of news, for instance, in a particular direction biased against other forms which may propagate freedom, etc. And you're going to find these people in religious circles, in organizational circles, in government, And, you know, pretty well everywhere, as Jacob said.
Some are operating in our society right now. I mean, Nigel, believe that?
Yeah, absolutely.
He did indeed.
Any ideas? Has anybody been speculated as being a hybrid that you know of, that's well known?
I know nothing of that. I don't know.
I have to ask, you know, that's a natural question. It's like,
you can never know, because you might choose somebody that you think is bad for whatever reasons, you know, because one's beliefs are in one direction. You might choose a particular person because they are unlike your beliefs, or you think they're bad people. But the problem is, there are also just bad people. As well as being hybridized, etc., it's there's no definitive test for it, really.
Also, I'd like to make a point here, which I think is really, really important, and it pertains to the question about who might be a hybrid, and also to the question that Nigel was often asked about, are there different types of aliens, and is it only the greys, and things like that. Those kinds of questions he just didn't want to answer, because he just thought they were irrelevant. Basically, it doesn't matter who is a hybrid and who isn't a hybrid, and it's a very dangerous path to go on if you try and establish who is what, because we can't know, sure, that's for certain. And to judge somebody as somebody you wouldn't want to have anything to do with because they are something so horrific could be a really restrictive thing.
Absolutely.
Because you can't know, okay? So not judging and not making those kinds of out-and-out statements, I think, is a really important thing to do, because not only can it be dangerous to do it, but also, again, it's not relevant, really. All you have to do, you don't have to worry, is this person a hybrid? Is that person a hybrid? All you have to do is follow those essential principles of being somebody who embraces what's of spirit and doesn't embrace what the greys are part of. And if you're that, it doesn't matter. You don't need to judge. You don't need to push anyone away. You don't need to say this person is this and this person is that. You just need to do what you can to make this physical universe more like the Godverse.
Yeah.
And if you try with every decision you make to make this physical universe more like the Godverse, you just can't go wrong. And that doesn't mean love everybody and embrace everyone, no matter how terrible they are. Absolutely not. You may have to avoid certain people if they are divisive and if they're stopping you doing that. You stay away from them, okay? But saying who's a hybrid, who isn't, who's somebody completely damned and who isn't, dangerous pathway, I think.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, my last question is, was this battle for the human soul, was it prophesized in the Bible?
Okay, so if you look at the Nag Hammadi texts, the ancient texts from the New Testament that were found, when were they found, John? In the 1930s, 1940s? Yeah. Okay, they're found by some shepherd boy in a jar in a cave somewhere in the Middle East, okay? They have more of the original texts of Christ's words, okay, that things that were thrown out that they weren't included in the Bible, okay. So in those texts, there's something called the Apocryphon of James, or the Apocalypse of James, in which Jesus actually warns his apostles of creatures that will come and take souls by theft. Okay, and these are described in these ancient Nag Hammadi texts, in many of the different texts, as the archons. Okay, the sons of God who came into the door unto the daughters of men and mixed with them. Sons of God, as in the God, that definition of God is more like beings that come from space. Okay, so it's all there in the ancient texts that this has happened. Okay, and it features not only in the Christian texts, the Nag Hammadi texts, the Gnostic Gospels. It features in the mystical side of Judaism, the Kabbalah. It features in Islam, in the Sufi religion. Buddhism anyway talks about these creatures, even in the mainstream, talks about the existence of beings like this. So it's all there. It's all, but a lot of it has been pushed aside because quite often the major texts which are recognized and used by the main religions only include that which will allow them to control people. If there's anything there which could introduce an element that will divest them of that control, is chucked out. So yes, it's everywhere. It's in all the ancient texts somewhere. And it certainly wasn't just prophesied, it was just described, because it has existed throughout our history.
So that brings me to, because I've heard the archons being referenced, you know, in the same manner as fallen angels. I'm not sure if that's the...
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I went, same thing.
Same got thing. You, same thing.
That is very interesting there. It is chilling, too. The thought of it is chilling. Is there anything that you would give me, like what Nigel suggested? What did he leave for the world? The message he left for the world to do, to really take this serious, you know, serious enough to do something about it.
Okay. So his biggest message was to be kind. Everybody, if they can try to find within themselves that state from which they came. Okay. And treasure and value in a sense of their own humanity as much as they possibly can. And his biggest statement he often made to people was, be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Realize that you're facing a horrendous situation more and more as the world goes more and more into states of greater and greater technological development and virtual existence, and that sense of emptiness moves in on you, where the sense of human connection is gone. Try to recapture that sense of human connection. Realize that it is the most valuable thing you have, and those greys are totally insignificant. That he used to describe them as no different to a Hoover, really, or some piece of electronic equipment that you have in your house. Even the tiniest, the most primitive form of biological life, a bacteria, is superior to a grey, because at least it has life, natural life. Okay. So he said, value your humanity, value other people's humanity, and keep your flexibility. Don't be so all the time. We are the internet and all the artificial intelligence that's out there, controlled by the companies that run all of it, okay, are trying to make us fit into an algorithm. They're throwing advertisements at us on our phones, on our laptops, all the time, trying to all the information we put in, the things we search for, all our needs, okay, are translated into signals of sales, adverts, right? They're making an algorithm for each of us based on our identification with the world, based on what we want, what we need, our search patterns, and so on. They endorse those physical needs, right? And we then respond again, and we become more like that. And we go more and more into that algorithm until we become the algorithm. And if you become that algorithm and identify so much with the physical universe, when you die, you will be trapped. You will be a ghost and at the edges of atoms, and you will be vulnerable to being manipulated by the greys. Okay. So don't do that. Don't be caught by the algorithm. Don't be tricked. Don't be fooled by all the next iPhone, the most attractive technology that's out there. You're more valuable than that by infinite times, really. And find that sense of inner value, those moments when you feel love for somebody, where you're hugging your child, where embracing your husband or your wife, or where you feel terrible because somebody's suffering. Those small moments are the most valuable moments that you can possibly have. Focus on those. Don't be trapped by the algorithm.
And John, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, right at the end of Nigel's book, he actually gave a series of statements, and I'll just mention sort of one or two. He actually makes a statement that comes from the Bible, in which Jesus says, is it not written in thy law that ye are gods? And really, Nigel is taking this really to be the living things are the extension of a perfect viewpoint, if you like, which he called Godhead. But really, it's this perfect order. But as Danielle says, you know, in order to have perfect order, you must have the possibility of disorder. And therefore, what we think are really separate functions, in other words, there's us and we go to God. This isn't really true, in that basically we change our viewpoint. We change the way change our mind, basically. And lastly, he says, you are really the all, and the all is really you, which is really an affirmation of that point. And I think Nigel's books really tell an absolutely wonderful as well as horrifying story. And I think that if people take notice of that, then they will be much better set to avoid the inevitable onslaught of these creatures, or this program, rather.
Very well said. Danielle and John, where can my listeners touch base with you or keep up with any other projects that you may be working on in the future?
Okay, so Nigel's website is www.nigelkerner.com. Very simple. And his books, his third book and his second book are available from all online booksellers and possibly physical stores as well for the third book, the most recent book, Grey Aliens and Artificial Intelligence. And if anyone wants to get his first book, it's out of print, but they can get it via the website if they want to find out the whole picture of everything he said.
All right. The book is called Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence, The Battle Between Natural and Synthetic Beings for the Human Soul. The book is written by the late Nigel Kerner, Danielle Silverman, and Dr. John Biggerman, my special guest. Many blessings to the both of you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you, Keita.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.